Can you all hear me? Cool. So my name is Nathan Watena, and I'm from Cornell University, and the project I want to talk to you about is part of my thesis work, and it was also helped with Michael Brown, my advisor Greg, and Thomas, the curator of the germplasm collection. And the focus of what I'm going to talk about today is a project exploring the Malus germplasm collection for sessions related to hard cider production that might be useful for the industry. So the cider industry, if you haven't had a chance to see it yet, has grown dramatically since 2009, a 50% annual increase all the way up to 2014. Now it's valued about $1.3 billion, and cider makers are growing rapidly, and they plan to continue growing in the foreseeable future. And in particular, there's an increasing demand for cider-specific apples, and to the point where they're willing to pay about double for cider-specific apples versus what are called common eating apples. And just to give you context to that, all apples will bring sweetness and sharpness. We learned a little bit about the differences there. But some apples, in particular cider-specific apples, will offer characteristics that are described as bitter or astringent, and these are considered desirable for cider makers for their apples. And the industry usually refers to them as tannins, just like in the wine industry. They are it's a little complicated, but they're essentially a subset of polyphenols, so we kind of view them in that way. But in the U.S., we use the LARS system, which was developed in the U.K. So really it breaks cider apples into four different categories, or all apples into four different categories. You have sharp, bittersweet, and sweet. You're most familiar with sharps and sweets. Those are just sweet and tart apples. But it's really those bitter sharps and bittersweets that the industry wants to add to the kind of the diversity of mixes and blends that they have. And this is based off of two principles, the amount of acidity in there and the amount of tannins. Again, industry uses the term tannins. And the acid component works out to be 4.5 grams per liter, and tannins is about 2 grams per liter. Those are the general thresholds between a sharp or a bitter sharp in terms of tannin, or a sweet or a bittersweet in terms of tannins as well. So our kind of goal was to look through the USDA collection and start to find a targeted population that we wanted to focus on that might be of some interest to cider makers, and then phenotype that collection. So the USDA collection, if you haven't seen it or haven't heard of it, it's an amazing resource. It's an hour north of where we're located, up in Ithaca, so it's up in Geneva, and it's one of the largest in the world. It has about 5,000 field accessions actively growing, and it crosses 33 Malus species, 15 hybrid species, and it's a wonderful place if you ever want to visit. And our hypothesis was spending some time out there and just seeing the sheer diversity in terms of fruit, in terms of what the tastes are out there, we hypothesized that there was going to be something interesting in there. But the challenge is Greg was not willing to pay me to go look at all 5,000 different accessions. He said, figure it out, go to a smaller number. So that was the core idea here. How do we go from 5,000 plus accessions actively growing in the field to something more manageable to look at in at least a field season? So we had two different methods. I don't have time to really delve into how we went through each of them, but we brought it down to about 308. The primary way was working with some collaborators, so Gail Volk, Ian Merwin, and Thomas Chow, the curator himself, and we looked at historical documents and looked at old literature and kind of compiled together list cider apples, which we call like historical cider apples. They were used at one point some way. We have indications that they'd be useful. And the second step that I kind of worked with was doing like a multi-cell query. I kind of call it data mining of the Green Global database. Again, I don't have time to really delve into how we go about that, but that process gave us 61, and the historical search process gave us 247 of them. So we knew our 308 accessions we were interested in, at least for this field season. And it's important to note that in the collection, it's extremely diverse, which is exciting, but you also lose replications. It's just too big. There's no way you could have replicates at 5,000 plus different trees. So each one is a single tree in the collection. So we went up there on weekly trips from August 15th to November 17th. We would go out there and we would sample each one, check the ripeness of the fruit, because we don't have too much data as to when a lot of the fruit would be ripe, so we'd test the starch pattern index. We were looking for a range of 6 to 8, which is much more on the starches have been fully hydrolyzed to sugars at that point. And then once we found trees, once they were deemed ripe, we would harvest them. It was a simple random sample from among the canopy, and we were looking for 15 fruit. And as we go through the processing of the fruit, there was kind of three sub-samples of 5 apples. So, and then the phenotypic areas that we looked at were broken into four categories. I call them external fruit characteristics, internal fruit characteristics, juice chemistry, and we looked at some polyphenol composition. So in terms of the external stuff, we looked at characteristics such as fruit cracking, fruit sunburn, fruit weight, diameter, peel background color. There's a peel green, then green-colored background color. Internal fruit characteristics, we looked at cortex starch pattern index, told us how ripe that fruit was when we actually started to process it and to juice it. And we looked at fruit fresh firmness as well. We also looked at juice chemistry. So in particular, soluble solid concentration, pH and titratable acidity. We looked at sugar composition. Thought it would be interesting to really understand what's out there. So we use Megazyme kits for that, glucose, fructose, sucrose, and sorbitol. And then we also looked at polyphenol composition for a smaller subset. It's expensive, and we were doing it with the core lab facility as we're getting our HPLC up and running. So we only sent 14 accessions. I'll talk about how we picked those, and it's kind of a wide range of them. And we were able to do it for relative quantification, so not actual quantification. And we did a semi-targeted analysis. So that means we had a good idea of what types of compounds we were looking for, but we wanted to still have an open analysis. So in 2017, we had 308 accessions that we were interested in. We were able to get samples from 180 of them. 128 had no fruit that year, biennial bearing, it happens. 12 samples went bad in storage, and then 8 accessions throughout the process didn't have a bit of data, so we had 158 accessions with full, clear phenotypic data. So the first stuff, the external fruit characteristics, fruit cracking, fruit sunburn, fruit weight. So here's a Granny Smith apple for reference that I was going to eat this morning and I decided to hold on to. So this would get a 1 because there's no fruit cracking. It would also get a 1 because there's no fruit sunburn. This apple weighs 150 grams roughly, and its fruit diameter was about 70 millimeters. Just give you some reference when you look at our means for this. It's green. It's not. There's no red peel blush on there. So we also looked at internal fruit characteristics. The one that's particularly important is the cortex starch pattern index. We're shooting closer to the 8, which is the end of the scale, which means all the starches have been hydrolyzed to sugar. So we're overall pretty successful at that. We got it with our mean. And then fruit firmness, give you a metric on that. If this apple was any less than 4.45 newtons, I as a consumer would reject it from an eating point of view. It would be too soft, too mushy. So our mean's a little higher, which is good to know. In terms of juice chemistry, our mean, we looked at all of these characteristics. The mean was 12.31 for soluble solids, pH, TA, polyphenol concentration. In terms of juice chemistry, it follows what we would expect, mostly fructose followed by glucose and sucrose. Sorbitol is interesting for cider makers, in particular because sorbitol is an alcohol sugar and doesn't get broken down in the fermentation process. So it actually is still in the fermented juice at the end, so it can be used as a residual sugar. So we wanted to incorporate that as well into this. And so if you plot this onto a scatter plot with titratable acidity on the y-axis and tannic acid equivalents, we converted it on the x-axis, and you classify them according to what the industry uses, this is kind of the breakdown that we get. And it's exciting because we're interested in the blue and red, so the bittersweets and bitter sharps. And, of course, we're interested in the stuff way on the far edges of that. But that's the breakdown. So we had a fairly even distribution between all of them. But we are most interested in stuff over between on those red and blue. So after getting that and being excited towards that, we started looking at what could we go bring to the core facilities at Cornell and do some UHPLC mass spec analysis to understand what polyphenols are actually driving the differences between stuff that has and does not have high polyphenol concentration. So we sat down, we looked at the list of 156 different accessions we had, and we wanted to pick some stuff that would be good benchmarks for the industry, places kind of points of reference for them. So not only did we try to span the total polyphenol concentration that we measured, so among some of our lower end was some dual-purpose apple, Liberty, which is often used as kind of a sharp apple, but also just a culinary an eating apple, Golden Delicious people are familiar with. Some other call-outs would be Kingston Black is at times lauded to be one of the few single varietal accessions that the industry really likes. So we had data on that. We wanted to add that to compare it. And Northern Spy is a dual-purpose apple as well. Ellis Bitter is another one. And then we went a little bit outside of Malus Domestica, and those are noted on the screen. So for a session called Cola, one called Zapta, And the bottom one's interesting because that is a Malice diversity session, so from Kazakhstan. So we, after we got the data back from them, we had a PCA analysis performed, and there, it kind of broke up into three different groups. The first group over here contains most of the common culinary apples, eating apples. Kingston Black is in there. Ellis Bitter is in there. So we're really interested to see that those all group together in a cluster. And then over in the top part, we had three of them, Stembridge, Jersey, Bramtot, and I can't even read that last one anymore. Oh, Zapta is the other one there. And then in the lower corner were actually the three highest polyphenol concentration accessions that we had. So that one from Kazakhstan, Medel d'Or, and it's only two in there. Sorry. But what we did from there is we said, okay, so they're starting to separate out. We wanted to understand what compounds are primarily driving that PCA analysis. And we got this heat map from it. So on the far axis are the different compounds that were identified through, and then on the bottom are the different accessions. And then the heat map is a standard heat map. Red means higher relative concentration. Blue means lower relative concentration. So, and to break this down a little bit for you guys, that top quadrant over here that has a lot of red on this side is actually all of the high polyphenol concentration accessions out of our list there. So we were excited to see that they kind of clustered together in terms of what they were high in terms of compounds. And those compounds are almost all entirely flavin-3-ols, and in particular procyanidins and a lot of isomers of procyanidins. And that's interesting for the industry perspective because literature indicates that those are compounds that primarily drive bitter and astringent characteristics in terms of what we taste. So that's one area there. The second group we saw was this kind of middle section, and that was pretty much two accessions, Zapta and Cola, which were two of the out of Malus domestica accessions that we use for UHPLC analysis. And it was a mix. The compounds that in that group that we identified were a combination of hydroxycinnamic acids and some flavin-3-ols. And the reason we found out that there's some similarities, they do both share the same maternal parent, which is elk mother. And then this last bottom section over here, primarily over here, is that group of mostly culinary or industry currently used accessions. And the compounds that we identified there are mostly hydroxycinnamic acids, which and derivatives of that. And those do have an important use for cider production. There's other literature that indicates that they're useful in terms of aroma and polyphenolic compounds that we would sense and we would appreciate. So, and Kingston Black, for example, is in that lower group as well. So kind of the summary points for this are, this, as far as we can tell, is the first attempted characterization of stuff in the collection for the specific use for the cider industry. Our sample population in the end had 49 bittersweets and 21 bittersharp accessions that might be of interest to the cider industry. And then the last point is the disparity between the procyanidin concentrations. It's relative analysis, not quantified yet. We hope to do that in subsequent years, but we hypothesize that procyanidins are one of the primary driving factors between high polyphenol concentration and low polyphenol concentration accessions that we looked at in the season, so which could be of use to the cider industry as they kind of expand their cultivar and accession population. But future work, that total equals 70 accessions of interest. In particular, there were a couple of them, Lynette, Medel d'Or, Bramtot, Zapta, and Red Rolls, are all accessions that continually surface to the top in terms of different metrics that we looked at. And Medel d'Or and Bramtot, we've already started to see some field cultivation. And it is important to note that this study is only one season. We will do it in continuous seasons, but it is by no means a go and plant these accessions, go get them from the collection. We have to repeatedly tell growers not to do that because there's a lot of other characteristics we need to look at. Precocity, bearing habit, biennial bearing, disease susceptibility, which we hope to look at in future replicated trials and start looking in that direction. But I think, thank you. There's a lot of people to thank for this project. My advisor and my committee as well, the PEC lab as a whole, and a lot of funding from this came from three different sources, Cornell, the university itself, the Cider Maker Association, and the USDA Hatch Fund. And thank you to everyone. If there are any questions, I'll gladly take them. I think I'm there.